Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. For the past few Januaries, we've sat down with Whitefish Bay author Nick Petrie as he's shared the first three installments in his series of novels featuring ex-Marine combat veteran and Milwaukeean Peter Ashe. Number four drops on the 15th, next Tuesday.
Nick Petrie launches the book at Boswell Book Company the night before in a conversation with yours truly. But if you just can't wait for a taste of this new novel called Tear It Down, Nick Petrie joins us now, and I asked him whether he'd ever expected or imagined we'd be talking about book number four.
No, never. I never thought the first book would see the light of day, and here I am. The fourth book is going to be out any minute. I'm revising the fifth book. I've got plans for six and seven. Life is strange and wonderful.
As we get to know our hero, because he is, and this is one of the things we have talked about over the years for every book, he is complex. He's not black and white. He's not easy. He's not pigeonholed or easily pigeonholed. But as we get to know him more and more, and in this book particularly, we get to know him in a different way, I think. I mean, was that intentional for you? I mean, we know about the PTSD, but he's working on some interesting pieces of that.
Well, the goal is with every book to kind of move him a little farther down his timeline. And when I started all of this, I don't think I really knew enough about post-traumatic stress and what a big deal it is for many people. And so I sort of thought, well, I'll write one book about a guy with post-traumatic stress and then it'll get better and it'll be about something else. But the more I learned and the more people I talked to, the more clear it is that for some people, this is something that really lasts in some way or another through their whole life. And so I wanted to kind of chart the path of him working through these issues of what it's like to have been to war, to have been in combat, you know, for an extensive period of time, which really messes with you. And some people can do it with no problem at all. But for most people, there is a period where you really have to reckon with it. And that was sort of my goal, was to sort of show that evolution through time. But also, every book can't be about this particular issue. And so I wanted him to sort of be out in the rest of the world a little bit and to use some of those same – to see how some of those same issues really – are experienced by people in other worlds. There's a great piece on Chicago Public Radio a couple years ago about how young people who live in areas where gangs are prevalent show all the symptoms of post-traumatic stress. So if you're a 17-year-old high school kid and you are trying to avoid that life, you know, you see, you know, you're in that kind of neighborhood. You get shot at. Your friends die. I have friends who've been through that. So I wanted to kind of show that aspect of it. And I have a character named Wanda Wyatt who's a war correspondent. She's a combat photographer because I've talked to people who have been journalists in war zones and what's that like and what effects do that have. So I wanted to sort of see what the other ramifications of that would be for other people in those kinds of situations.
Well, and putting them all together in this one story is interesting because you get to see those different threads, and you have a teenager who is a musical phenom, but who's in the middle of a very, very ugly situation in his hometown of Memphis, which is where most of this book takes place.
Right. Well, and one of the challenges I set for myself for this book was that I wanted to tell these two sort of parallel storylines. So we have this this young guy, this 15-year-old kid named Eli Bell, who's a musician, who is trying to keep himself out of sort of the gangster life in Memphis, in a place where there really aren't other paths. There aren't that many other choices. But as often happens, his friends kind of rope him into something. And so I wanted to tell Eli's story as well as kind of what's happening with Wanda Wyatt, this combat photographer, and with Peter being sort of the link between the two, Peter Ashe, my hero. And I'd never really told this sort of braided sort of series of stories before. And so that was kind of the thing I was trying to set for myself. And it was weird. It was a very different thing to do. But that's part of, you know, the goal is to keep trying to do something different, to not just tell the same story over again.
One of the things that I noticed about Peter in this book is talking about the PTSD is that there are moments in here where he's reconciling with it in a way where he realizes that he enjoys it. There's parts of it that he really likes, and he wants that feeling of that adrenaline and the feeling of rising to that occasion. And we've seen that in him before in the other books, but it's like he has a self-awareness, I think, in this book that maybe he's earned over time. Maybe he's earned it because he's spent time with June, who's not really, she's there, but not really in this book a lot.
No, there's a bit less of her in this book. And that's deliberate, is because the goal wasn't to have every book be sort of how they are together and how their relationship is evolving forward. It's to sort of allow that to unfold a little bit from book to book. But, you know, that's really the dirty secret of war, is that it's exciting. And that's how we get young men to go risk their lives, is that there is this sort of adrenaline component to it, and along with this intense camaraderie that comes from being this close-knit group of people going through, this incredible crucible of experience. And, you know, there are veterans who one of the components to the challenge of coming home from a war zone is that they miss that. They miss the camaraderie and that feeling of connection, which is really hard to obtain any other way.
Well, particularly for men in our society, you're not supposed to have those kinds of close bonds with other men.
Right. And men often don't really learn how to build those friendships. Whereas I think for women, it's one of the things that you learn in your childhood. And you know, for men, it's, you know, in our culture at least, it's really about being stoic and being strong and, you know, suck it up and go to work and all that stuff. But those relationships, I mean, that's one of the things I'm really trying to convey, is the intensity and the pleasure of those relationships. But it's also part of what makes it hard to go back to, you know, the so-called normal world, is how do you create something that is hopefully less lethal but still as rich and invigorating as, you know, this terrible combat experience.
Well, you mentioned Wanda, the combat photographer, and the reason Peter is in Memphis is because of her and because June sent him there. And you've managed somehow to talk about tying things together in interesting ways. You know, she's in a house that people are sort of blowing up or trying to.
Well, and that's what kicks this whole thing into gear is Peter, my protagonist, is, you know, kind of restless at home, and he's trying to find an excuse to go have another adventure and to you know, kind of scratch his adrenaline itch. And June sort of sees this in him and says, well, I have a friend in Memphis who's being harassed. And by the time he gets there, somebody's actually driven a dump truck into her living room. So Peter's job is to find out kind of who's harassing her and why and all of the, you know, that's one of the threads that starts to unravel.
And of course, one of my favorite characters makes a return visit, and that is Lewis. I think everyone loves Lewis. There's just something about Lewis.
People do love Lewis.
I want him to be my friend. I really do.
Well, and there's something about Lewis in that Lewis doesn't particularly care what anybody thinks. Lewis has his own path that he's traveling, and he plays by his own set of rules. And there's something that is, I think, really appealing to those of us who, you know, set the alarm clock every morning and we go off to work and we do the dishes and we go to the grocery store and all those things. So he is just a blast to write because I get to indulge that part of myself that wants none of those things.
But Lewis has those things. He just goes away from it a lot.
Right, right. Well, my line is that he's a semi-reformed career criminal, or he likes to think he's reformed, except, you know, like Peter, he sort of misses the action, so he's looking for any excuse to go play.
Well, and he and Peter have such a wonderful connection too, and we see it in different ways. I mean, of course, they have each other's backs and all of that, but I remember as I was reading this book thinking, oh, we're talking about some interesting stuff here that they haven't really talked about before. They've kind of touched, and we're talking about race, we're talking about friendship, what that means, friendship between men, friendship between men of two different races. And there's just some interesting stuff that kind of has come out in this book that I hope you're going to continue with.
Well, I've always seemed to find myself writing about both something that's sort of happening in my own life and something that I'm observing in the culture and something I'm interested in. So when the Drifter, my first book, is really about veterans coming home and was also about sort of the aftermath of the financial crisis. Both two things that I really couldn't stop thinking about. The next book, Burning Bright, is really about emerging technology. It takes place on the West Coast I read a lot of science fiction growing up, and so it was a chance to play with some of that kind of stuff. But I think those are real issues too, in that, you know, the world is changing quickly, and we are not being very deliberate about our choices, about what we're choosing to adopt and what we're not choosing to adopt. You look at social media, you know, all of those things. The third book was set in Colorado, and it's about the newly legal cannabis industry, and you know, so what are the ramifications of that? And this book, I didn't really set out to write about, you know, race and class and friendship, but when you set a book in Memphis, and music is a part of it, it's almost inevitable, especially kind of the way that my work sort of shows up. So I'm not sure I could avoid it. The funny thing about this book is there is no earthquake in it, but I picked Memphis in part because it's the center of something called the New Madrid Seismic Zone. We think about earthquakes in the West Coast, but this is the site of four of the largest earthquakes in recorded American history in the early 1800s. And they think that there's another one that's, you know, kind of due any minute. And I had this sort of elaborate plan with this earthquake and all these different groups of people were going to come together. And of course, you know, my plans always sort of get turned on their head and the earthquake never shows up. And I'm writing about, you know, these people and their relationships, which is what interests me.
Without giving anything away, I have to say that final chapter is quite breathtaking.
Oh, I'm glad. Thank you. That's the goal. See how long you can hold your breath.
Yeah. It was like, wow, wow, wow. That must have been fun to write.
It was fun to write. It's an interesting process I don't outline. I sort of write forward, and sometimes that means I have to write backwards because it goes a direction that it turns out it shouldn't really go, or I have to go back and revise something to make it all fit in. But to discover as I write, to have this an incident kind of emerge out of midair, and I don't want to spoil this for anybody who has not read this book, and I don't think anybody who's listening to this has really read this book because it's not out yet. But my last book, there's a gurney ride down a mountain road.
Yeah, I remember that.
That I didn't plan. It just sort of came about in the through the course of the story, and people kept talking about it. People talk about it to me. I had a conversation about it 3 days ago, and it's not something I planned. I could never. What a ridiculous thing to put in the story. But it sort of arose naturally. And I think it's believable because it arose naturally. And that's part of the fun is to sort of, you know, to be lying in bed in the middle of the night and have this idea just pop into my head.
And you go, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see where that one goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you think people in Memphis are going to react to how you drew their city, how you created their city?
I don't know. You know, I'm always a little concerned about that. And this is the first book I've written about a place where I never really had a personal connection, right? So I wrote a book about Milwaukee, which is easy because I grew up in Milwaukee. I live here now. I wrote a book about the West Coast. I've traveled all over the West Coast. I lived in Seattle for 10 years. I wrote a book about Denver and Colorado, and I've traveled through Colorado, and I have friends there. But, you know, I'd never been to Memphis. I wrote half the book before I went there. But I had spent time in Detroit, and there are some similarities. They actually have a lot of similarities to Milwaukee on a certain level, where we have our deeply challenged urban core, where most of the work and most of the money is outside the city proper. So that was kind of my access point. But, you know, I try very hard to keep the setting real. You know, if I'm describing a patch of woods in the middle of a bad part of town, that patch of woods is really there. If I'm describing a building, there's a juke joint in this book. It's based on a real juke joint. I mean, I've spent time in Memphis, so I spent a lot of time and effort on that because I don't want people to feel like I'm just, you know, using and abusing their town. I want to make it feel lived in, and I'm also really interested in setting. And the wonderful thing about this character, who is really kind of rootless, is that I can really set a book in the place that suits the story best. And in a way, the story that I'm telling comes out of the place that it's in. This book, Tear It Down, set in Memphis, would have been a different book if I'd set it in Austin or I'd set it in Atlanta.
Or Detroit.
So that's part of the fun, is sort of finding what that setting wants to tell me. So what's the story that's going to come out of that particular place?
Very cool. That's a great way to think about it.
It's a weird process. Writers are very strange people.
Well, that's all right. We still like having them into Lake Effect anyway. So, well, Nick Petrie, thanks so much. Best of luck on your tour, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Nick Petrie's latest novel, the fourth in his Peter Ash series, is called Tear It Down. He and Bonnie will reprise their conversation and talk about some other things probably too next Monday at Boswell Book Company.